You're listening to the Volleyball by Design podcast. Today, we have a special guest who is the club director of operations of the biggest volleyball club in Canada. And we're going to have a little bit of a different episode where we're going to talk about, you know, how to grow a volleyball club. What is it? What does a championship volleyball club look like? Because this club is always in the ring for national championships, provincial championships in all different age groups. So how does that happen? As a coach, I'm sure you may be interested in figuring out how to grow a club, how to create that championship culture within a club. So we're going to talk about all these great things in today's episode. So stay tuned. Hi, I'm Coach Brian Singh, and after 11 years coaching competitive volleyball and as a head coach of a college team, I've become obsessed with helping athletes and coaches improve their knowledge and skills of the game by teaching them how to train efficiently and effectively to ultimately reach their volleyball goals. I've created the Volleyball by Design podcast to give you simple, actionable, step-by-step strategies so you can get clarity and apply what you learn right away. This is the Volleyball by Design podcast. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 55 of the Volleyball by Design podcast. My name is Brian Singh. I'm the host of the Volleyball by Design podcast. How you guys doing out there today? Man, it is another week, and I'm hoping to drop some value for you guys today. And we got a special guest. We got a special guest on the pod today. But before we get into that, I just want to welcome our new listeners. If you're a new listener to the pod, welcome. You got about 54 episodes to get caught up on. I hope you find some value in them. And if you are a regular listener, as usual, thank you for tuning in. I appreciate the support. I appreciate you guys coming in. And I'm loving the reviews that are coming into the pod, by the way, everyone. Keep giving me reviews. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts, I believe. And I don't think you can do it on Spotify, but I know you can do it on Apple. So I appreciate the reviews. I read them all. And I appreciate the 5 stars for everyone that's been given the pod 5 stars. Like I said, you know, June is a year since the pod has been out, and we've grown so much. It's unreal and it's incredible. And I can't wait to continue to grow and grow this game. So thank you for that. Another thing too is, hey, this week, volleyball, is a big thing. We got the Volleyball Nations League going on, but also I want to let you know that Digital Volleyball Academy is open for this week until Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern time. So many of my listeners know that it's my signature membership where I get to mentor coaches all around the world. I get to bring you into my gym and you can see what we do inside our college gym. I get to do live training online every month with you guys. You guys get access to all my courses and resources and all the fun stuff that you want to know. You know, when I was a young coach, I didn't have that. So it's my way of trying to provide a program that is just catered towards coaches. So if you're a coach out there and you think that you could benefit from my mentorship and my resources and the amazing coaches inside DVA, I got to say, we have over 100 coaches in DVA all working together to grow and get better. So my program, my membership is open until this Thursday, July 1st at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Go to digitalvolleyballacademy.com and get registered. And I can't wait to see you inside the membership. It's going to be incredible. So make sure you go to digitalvolleyballacademy.com and I can't wait to see you inside the membership. All right. So let's get on with today's episode. Oh, man, I'm so excited. So we got one of my good friends, and he is the director of volleyball operations at the biggest volleyball club here in Canada. That's a big deal. The biggest volleyball club in the country. And we have one of the men responsible for this to happen to the club. And that is Jesse Saddy. Jesse, what's up, man? How are you?
What's up, Brian? Thanks for having me out here, man. I always appreciate you. You're always showing you're always showing me support and the club support. So, you know, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. It's great. Yeah, even before I got into the college coaching game, you guys have been killing it over at Pac-Man and just producing championship teams. You got some great culture over there. But listen, before we get into that, let's just tell our listeners, a little bit about yourself and your background and, you know, what you do.
Yeah, so, you know, my name is Jesse Saddy. You know, as you already said, I'm a director at Pac-Man Volleyball or director, you know, of volleyball operations. I've been doing this for a few years. I've actually been a part of Pac-Man my whole entire life. I actually grew up being a player in the club. So the club actually started in 2002. And the second year of the club's fruition, I actually joined in 2003. And it's a pretty cool story of how my grade 8 middle school teacher, Kelly Smith, he's the founder of the club. He's the executive director of the club. He was my grade 8 teacher. And, you know, he started the club a year before with like a passionate group of, you know, of volleyball players from his previous school. And he just got us hooked. And it was myself and, you know, six or seven other guys from the middle school we went to in Mississauga. And it kind of just grew from there, man. Like, you know, we started off as this really small club with one, you know, two teams at the time. And, you know, and it was actually our first year ever touching a volleyball. So it was a really cool startup. You know, our middle school teacher, Kelly, you know, he was really passionate about the sport. He was actually a swim coach. That's the funny thing. He started this volleyball club, has zero background in volleyball whatsoever. So it was this really organic situation where, you know, we were first learning how to play volleyball and he was kind of learning how to coach. Like, you know, he would be reading books and watching videos and he'd be sharing, you know, volleyball literature with us. And, you know, before you knew it, we started winning, you know, in our very first year, we started winning some championships. I remember we won a provincial championship when we were 14 and then that ball just kept rolling, man. We were like sponges. You know, he did such a great job giving us resources, putting us in an environment to, you know, I remember he'd always get big coaches to come out. I know you're really familiar with, you know, Dustin Reed. I remember being 16 and Dustin Reed, you know, being in our gym, you know, teaching us how to play defense and serve receive. So that was a really cool experience, man. So that's kind of how it all started. You know, it started from one middle school teacher who just was really passionate about a sport. And then, you got a bunch of kids together. And if you look at us now, you know, we have almost 5,000 annual members a year. You know, and in 2002, we were at like 20. So pretty unique and cool situation.
Yeah, that's 5,000 members. That's an accomplishment right there. So this episode is a little bit different. You know, I'm normally used to talking about the tactics and skills of our game and the strategies and all that stuff, which coaches do appreciate. Don't get me wrong. So Volleyball by Design listeners, we're going to have a little special different situation for you here. We have a lot of coaches on this pod who, you know, want to understand what it means to run a volleyball club, how to grow a volleyball club. Some coaches in here may be interested in starting one. Some coaches in here already are part of a volleyball club, but are interested in growing it to the next level. And I think more importantly, some coaches want to understand how do you build a championship club to get multiple championships. And I can tell you, based on my experience, you know, I've been around the game for a while, is Pac-Man. When you hear the word Pac-Man volleyball club, you think they're the best club. They're the best, whatever. It doesn't matter if it's 14U, 15U, 16U, 17U. When you hear all Pac-Mans at this tournament, they're going to win it. They're always expected to win or favorites to win. And that is because you guys produce championship teams every year. I got a simple question for you. How do you do that? How do you produce championship teams every year at multiple different age groups? It's not like you have one age group that just dominates and everyone else kind of like, you know, it's like 14, 15. So there's always a championship Pac-Man team. How?
Yeah, so that's a good question, man. And I should be careful I answer this because I should really be bottling it myself and, you know, selling it for millions of dollars. But I think the simple answer right now, and obviously, you know, we'll elaborate on it as we go, but I really think it's kind of like this trickle down effect where the main guys in our club right now are like Pac-Man lifers, guys that were around the club since day one. Guys that played for the club, we were part of the championship team. We were part of the first ever, you know, provincial championship in the club. We were part of the first ever national championship. We were part of the first ever 18U national championship. You know, so when you look at that success and that culture, a lot of it comes from that trickle down. So, like I said before, you know, we have really good. Our executive director, the founder of the club, you know, it kind of starts with him, right? Like he set this really high standard and bar when we were younger, because, you know, I think I'm really competitive and I think I really like to win, but I would say that, you know, when it comes to wanting to win and, you know, putting all your effort in and, you know, going above and beyond and, you know, taking care of your athletes, I would say, you know, he was the main guy and he showed us what it took to win and what kind of work you had to put in, you know, and then as that trickled down and we got to a position where we started coaching in the club, we started inheriting a lot of those traits, you know, and a lot of that mindset. So in terms of championship culture, like I can tell you what to do. Can you do it tomorrow and win tomorrow? I'd say it's unlikely. I'd say you could start it tomorrow, but then it would be a process of, you know, however many seasons it'll take you. Because at the end of the day, this started for us in 2002, you know, we're in 2021 right now. So, you know, we started winning pretty early on, but we started having really significant wins in the last 10, you know, I'd say the club was, we had one team that was successful for about the first 5 years of the club's fruition, you know, And then the second team shortly after started doing well. And then, but now we're in this interesting situation where it's like, it seems like in every age group, we're having a lot of success. And then in beach volleyball on the beach scene, you know, we're having a lot of success as well, but it really starts from the top down. You know, you have to have, you know, you have to have good leaders in the club. You have to have good role models in the club, you know, and then they also have to know how to relay information, or they have to know how to, you know, share that knowledge, you know, with the people that are under them. So I think that's kind of been the main, you know, catalyst for how, you know, we've built this club culture. You know, it started with a guy that just, you know, was passionate about the sport, didn't know much, but had no ego and was willing to learn. And then it started with a group of guys that just love to play, and we played for each other. And, you know, we're the team that started, we're all still best friends to this day. And now we're still giving back to the club. And, you know, we're just trying to give these kids like an ounce of what we used to have. And even just giving them an ounce has been enough to, you know, give them this kind of championship mindset. I know that's not really a technical answer. It's a little bit more of an emotional answer, but I really think that when you talk about club culture, you can't deny that part of it. You know, like there's obviously steps that you can take, and you can coach each team a certain way, but you really need to adopt a mindset somewhere, and you really need to have gone through, you know, some stuff, you know, in order to give back to your players. So I think that's kind of how it all started. It's really that trickle down effect. You know, we had great leadership, and now it moves down, and we continue to have, you know, great ambassadors in our club that have been around forever.
So you guys started with one team. Coach was a, you know, was a swim coach, didn't know much. So he learned as he, and this is actually an interesting lesson. So even though he wasn't a volleyball coach, because of his passion to learn and his understanding of, you know, how to form relationships, how to build that culture, how to create an experience for their athletes, you guys just, you learned together and you grew, and you end up winning a provincial championship. Is that what you said?
Yeah. And then exactly. And yep.
And then from there on end, once you have one provincial championship, you know, more teams start coming up and more teams start being instilled into that amazing environment that you guys created. And that over a course of 15 years is just a matter of time before you start seeing more championships and more championships. Does that sound about right?
You're 100% right. And for the guys that have been around forever, it's like, I preach what I did, you know, I preach what I was a part of, you know, I don't make anything up. Like I teach kids the way that I was taught, you know, I'm a big part of the club. Like the club comes first, the kids know that, you know? So I think when, even in my situation, when I'm working with athletes, they can see that through me. Like they can see that, you know, this guy is the club, or this guy is a big part of the club. And, you know, I think when you instill the club on the kids, and then they start believing in culture, because, you know, Brian, you know this, you've coached a million kids. A lot of kids are in it for individual merit. You know, they're in for their own development, or they're only, like when it comes to a team, they're looking at which team can I go to where I can be the starter? Which team can I go to where I like this team, but the setter is no good. He's not going to give me good sets. I'm not going to get, like, how many times have we seen athletes like that, yep. You know? And in our club, it's different because we preach culture. Like, you know, because at the end of the day, every kid's going to get better. Like, yeah, you might say our setter is not good right now, but you might say that in September, but, you know, wait till you see the process, because, you know, we talk about culture, but now wait till the training comes in, you know, wait till the technical aspect comes in, you know, that's where, you know, you're going to learn. But I think that culture thing is really important, you know, because we've seen many situations where athletes are very, you know, they're a little bit, you know, a little selfish in terms of, you know, they're just looking for their own benefit, where you should find a club that has really deep, rich culture, you know, and you'll see the type of success that you can have.
Right. You know what? Let's kind of dive into that a little bit. So I like, and it's a simple answer actually, because, you know, how do you create championship teams every year? Well, you model. So you had a championship team at the beginning, and you had the passion, yep. you had the coach, you had the interest, you had that culture. You everyone understand on the same page. And then you model every team after that, and you instill those values. It's not about, you know, the hot shot, the starter, this, that. It's about that culture. And eventually people that want to be a part of that will come, and you grow. And the secret is championship culture is championship culture, right? You have that. You have a formula for success. All you got to do now is teach the skills of our game, which is funny you say that, because, I mean, this is your interview, so I'm not going to talk too much. But basically, I have the same philosophy where there in our game, volleyball is a simple game. You pass, you set, you hit, you block, you dig, you serve. And that's it. There's what, six major skills in our game. Yep. I'm pretty sure that when you have like top level coaches, when it comes to teaching the skills to youth, there is only so much you can do. It's not like, you know, everybody knows how to teach a kid how to pass a volleyball. There's only so much ways you can teach it. So understanding our game from a skill point of view, every coach can teach athletes how to play this game. But why isn't every team a championship team? It's because of what you talked about.
100%. And it's funny that you said that because, like, obviously there are some different ways to teach skills, but I'll say it really simply. I think there's one way to teach every skill to perform it at the highest level. But I think there's a million ways to teach how you approach those skills. And I think that's kind of the key thing that I try to focus on because even though I'm a coach, I don't just go into a gym and say, okay, put your hands together, you know, lock your elbows, make contact on your foot. Like, that's not how we teach them how do you approach the actual skill, you know, like, what do you need to do to make yourself better? How do you approach the serve again, there's one way to teach platform. There's one way to teach having a strong base. There's one way to teach arm swing. You know, no one's inventing a different type of arm swing because they realize that there's one way. But yeah, how you deal with each player and how you guide them through the approach. Because at the end of the day, if you have 100 athletes of the same skill level, what's going to separate them is their mental, or their, you know, like how they approach the game, like how well they score, how well they attack, you know. And a lot of that has to do with coaches and, you know, sharing, you know, teaching them. Like, anyone can be a great hitter, but I mean, if you struggle under pressure, then you're not considered a great player. It's how do you overcome those things? And I think that's where approach, you know, is really, really important for coaches to work with their kids.
Yeah. So I agree. And it's funny you said that, because it's a combination of culture and exactly what you just described. So in our program, like, what we talk to our coaches about is, you know, there's a formula for having a championship team. Right? For me, this is my thing, or a championship program. Culture is the number one, right? Character, culture, that's number one for me. Efficiency is number two for me. And it's exactly what you just talked about. How can you manipulate the skills more efficiently? And that's our job, to be able to teach our athletes kind of what you say, how to approach it, how to do it more efficiently. Yeah. And the great thing is that every player is different. You have to understand every player is going through something different and get to know them and build that relationship. And that's, again, part of the culture, right? So you have culture, you have efficiency, and then you just have straight up work, like preparation, planning, you know, creating, you know, all that planning and creating and all that stuff is a big part. You put those three together, you have a championship program. But the interesting thing is kind of like what you talked about is, what does that mean though? What does culture mean? And you talked a little bit about it here, how you guys, you when you coach, everybody could tell you're a Pac-Man coach. Like, you bleed Pac-Man. That's your club, and you coach with that passion. So people see that passion. People understand that you're creating relationships with them. You're building relationships, right? I want you to talk about, and not every coach can do this, but for me, I think this is what separates you and your club and your potential coaches more than anybody. But can you talk about, you know, when kids need rides homes, when, you know, that part of it, I don't want to say, cause I know where I'm going for, right? Talk about that side, cause I think that's super important. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, so I'll share a bit of context when I grew up playing. So, you know, I grew up in an area, really multicultural, really diverse area. You know, a lot of our families, you know, immigrated from other countries, you know, and came to this area. So, you know, we actually are, Pac-Man's known for being the most, not only are we the biggest club in Canada, not only are we the most successful, but we're by far the most diverse and multicultural. So a part of what I talked about, that trickle-down effect, is I grew up with a group of guys. Our whole team was Indian, Black, Asian, you know, maybe one or two white guys. But that was our team for like 5 years, you know. And we had, and again, we always needed rides to practice, because like a lot of our families, you know, work in different industries, you know, work in industries of like, you know, factories and things like that. So like, I'll be honest, like my parents were always working all the time. You know, my mom and my dad both worked in factories while I was growing up. You know, if they came home from work, they're super tired, they have to go to, you know, so a lot of us were in a situation where we couldn't even get rides to practice, you know, which wasn't even far, you know, it was almost in our neighborhood. So our coach drove us to every practice, drove us to every tournament. You know, hey, did you guys eat breakfast? Let's go through a drive through real quick. You know, we started getting better. And as we got older, we had to travel a bit. Like, we had a tournament in Ottawa, you know, shit, like, it's hard to afford, you know, hotels, you know, our coach took care of that. And then as we started getting better and he realized we had to go to more and more tournaments and hotels, and we had to start jumping on flights to go to nationals. You know, he started expanding the club and running house leagues, started running camps, and he started having us coach in these camps so that we could use that money and put it aside and use it for our flight. So I'll be honest, a lot of us, mind you, the OVA fees were really minimal, you know, back, you know, 15 years ago, but the flights add up and the hotels add up. You know, he did everything in his power to make sure that a lot of these kids, you know, myself included, didn't have to, you know, ask our parents for money. So going back to where that kind of trickles down to how I started coaching. So it's funny, I started head coaching a team in 2014, 2015, and it was like, I couldn't believe how almost mirror identical it was to like when I played. It was almost like I was meant to coach this team. And I'm like, hey, like I knew that like the way my coach got the best out of us was like, he did so much for us. You know, he helped us so much that when we got into that national finals and it's like 14-14 in the third set, and we had 5 years of having this coach do it, you know, there's no, we're not hesitating to die. You know, there's no, you know, sometimes an athlete takes a step and says, you know, they don't die for the ball. Like with everything that was done for us, the ball could be going into a pit of fire and we're jumping and we're diving in trying to save that ball. So I learned very quickly is, hey, if you do the best for your players, you know, and you go above and beyond for them, when you get to that national finals, they're not second guessing about going for a ball. They're not second guessing about giving maximum energy for you. You know what I mean? So when I started coaching, I started doing the same thing, man. There's a core contingent of guys. You know, it kind of happened that they were like the main core, you know, not only skill level wise, but culture wise, because they were from the same area, went to the same middle school as me, went to the same high school as me, you know. So these car rides were super valuable about sharing stories, you know, sharing stories about the same schools. We had some of the same teachers. So these guys were soaking that up, and that was a big part of the culture. So the truth is you can't always instill culture on all 12 players, because I'll be honest, like we had guys, like we had the 5 or 6 guys from the core area, that same high school, same as me, you know, but then we had guys from Oakville. We had guys from Toronto, you know, we had guys from Burlington. So, you know, as much as we tried, I tried to individually give them, the truth is you can't always connect with everybody, you know, but what you do is you really connect with some of the core guys that then branch it out and, you know, share that knowledge with all the other guys, or then just create a dynamic and an aura in which when people step into our gym, they're like, oh, okay, now I get it. Like now I get what Pac-Man is about, you know? And it was very predominant. Like when my team got to 18U, you know, everyone knows the Ketrazinski brothers in volleyball. Like they're like a household name. You know, Cole played at UCLA. Xander played at Ryerson, and Xander's playing pro right now. He's on the national B team, the next gen team. Those guys always played up. So by the time my group got to 18U, those guys were coming down to my team. And I remember a part of me was like, damn, are those guys going to like come down to us and maybe, and not, and no, they're the nicest guys in the world, but say like, hey, like, you know, or are they going to act like they're the best or like they're too skilled? But it was a really unique situation because those guys were playing up, up, up. Those guys were in a lot of tough finals. You know, those guys were in a lot of tough divisions. So they actually never won, you know, an 18U, you know, a national championship. They didn't have a lot of success and they're amazing players. They just, you know, there were a lot of tough competition. But what happened was when they came down to my team and our team was holding it down, you know, we had won 2 or 3 national championships by that point. You know, we were coming into that year. So you add like these two top players and then you put them in this culture and this dynamic of this winning, you know, winning culture per se. And then it was like the ball was rolling from there because you already have a winning culture, you know, because this team was holding it down. And would we have loved to have those guys play for us when they were of age? Of course, you know. But we're like, you know what? There's a time and a place. It's all about development. Those guys should be playing up because it helps them. We're going to do our part by making sure that this dynamic and this team is so strong and we're going to win a bit. And you're going to build this like, you know, hardworking culture and practice so that when those guys came in, it was like seamless. They loved it. They come into practice like, oh shit, these guys all work really hard. Oh, these guys are, you know, this is what it feels like to win. And it's ironic saying that because those guys are so skilled, but you know, sometimes that happens, you know, if you don't win and then you join into a winning culture, and then you win a bit, then it kind of takes you to your, you know, takes you to that next level. So that was a big part of, you know, what we had done. I'm like, if I can do a lot for these guys, if I can get them to practices, if I can take them on a flight and go to BC and just, you know, assure their parents that, hey, they're alive and well, like, you know, they're eating this and that, you know, and then when it comes down to it, you know, that culture became really, really solid, and it became unbreakable.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. You basically described what championship culture is. And I think there's two takeaways that I took from it. And these are probably the two biggest ingredients for me was one, we're in the business of creating relationships, which is exactly what you did. And two, demonstrating that you genuinely care for your athletes. That's it. Simple. Relationship building and demonstrating that you care. Now, every coach can do this in their own way, right? Like, we're not saying that you have to go and pay for your athletes' flights and do all that stuff, right? That was the circumstance that you were in. But there are many ways that coaches can show that they care. And there are many ways that coaches can build relationships with every single player on their team. And I think that's a secret, to be quite honest. And I'm thinking back to our success when I coached club, and how we were able to go from 15U to 18U. I'm kind of like you in this sense, where when I coached club, and I had that 15U year where I took them from 15U all the way to 18U, and that was the year we had Dane and Kofi Gemma, and we had a lot of other players on the team. They're still close to right now. It's incredible. Out of that 15, 16, 17, 18U, out of 4 years, we only had one or two players ever leave that team. It was the core all the way through. It was the core all the way through. One or two players left. And you have to wonder why. And Danon at the time, I talk about him a few times on the pod before. Danon was the number one middle in the country. He could have gone wherever he wanted to go. And he was actually getting howled by his friends. Like, oh, why don't you go play for the number one team? Why are you playing here? Because we weren't the number one team at the time. Right? We were, I think, top five. And go play for this. Go to like. And at that time, I was a nobody. I was a young brown dude coaching. I was nobody. I never played college ball. I never played anything. So I was kind of like Kelly in that sense. I loved the game and I learned. I had a basketball background and, you know, so I knew sports, but that was that. But why relationships, caring, and then, you know, that's part of building that championship culture and that environment where you foster that. Because it wasn't just me creating relationships with the guys. It was the guys creating relationships with each other too. And you do that, no one's going to leave. No one wants to leave that. You don't want to leave your friends. You don't want to leave your brothers.
And that's exactly right. And the thing is, as a coach, again, it all has to start from the coach, right? It all has to start like that trickle down effect. Like as a coach, like I have to be the first guy in the gym. I have to be the first guy that the guys see when they walk into my gym, you know? And then I have to be the last guy that leaves. Like, I remember, like, even when these guys were 18U, like, they're adults, right? When you're 18U, you're an adult, you're 18. And, you know, I remember, like, you know, some parents would come late. Like, we'd end practice at 10 o'clock, you know? Some family, you know, some parents were running late, you know, there'll be an accident on the 401, you know, and they don't get to, they're not able to pick up the kid until like 10:15, 10:20. And the way our permit works is that at 10 PM, you got to be out of the gym. Like, you can't be inside the school. They kick you out of the school. So I remember, like, these guys are 18, you know, and I would always, you know, I'd always have to drive a couple of guys home. I'd say, hey guys, you know, so-and-so's parents are 20 minutes late. We're just going to hang with them. We're just going to hang outside with them. We're just going to chill, wait for his parents to go, you know, because at the end of the day, parents understand that, yeah, my kid's 18. He can wait outside until I pick him up. But even when the parents drive by and they see like a contingent of like the coach and like three guys hanging with their kid, and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, hey, it's all good, man. Like, this is like bonus. This is overtime. Like, you get rewarded for, you get time and a half, right? Like, I'm like, this is overtime. Like, we just busted our ass for 2 hours. And now this is like overtime. We're getting, like, they're talking, they're listening to music. They're, you know, like, these are such valuable things. But again, that trickle down that we talked about, I have to be the first person they see when they walk in my gym, and I have to be the last guy that goes, because, you know, I have to, that's the only way you can hold these athletes accountable. You know what I mean? You know, I'm always there, and they know I'm a big part of the club. They know my full-time gig is, you know, the thing is, like, I head coach these teams, but I have to help every team to some degree, you know? And the fact that, like, all day long I'm doing those things and then I'm still giving them my undivided attention, that's a big part of the culture. So as long as coaches, man, like, if we could share any, like, tidbit of knowledge, it's like, as long as you coach for the right reasons and you give every athlete, you know, what they deserve, you know, whether they play for you for a year or 5 years, like, you're always going to have success, you know? Because at the end of the day, like, Brian, we've seen lots of coaches that simply do it for their ego. You know what I mean? Like, the truth is, and you hate to say, you know, you hate to say it and see it, but there are coaches out there that coach for their own personal merit. They coach for autonomy. They coach because they get power and they like having power. You know, it's that joke that they make in all those movies about, like, it's always, you know, you got picked last in gym class, you know? So then you go in a situation where you coach kids, and then it's like you bully kids because you were, you know, and you see it all the time. And to be honest, sports is so general in terms of you see which coaches do it the right way and you see that's why they have success. And then you see the coaches that kind of maybe do it for the wrong reasons. And then you understand why, you know, they're not having as much success. And I would never throw anyone under the bus, but that's like the harsh reality. Even though this is the OVA and youth volleyball, you know, you see it in all walks of sports. You know what I mean? Like we talk club culture, you know, you look at basketball, for example, like what's the one organization they talk about culture the most? They talk about the San Antonio Spurs, you know?
100%. I use Greg Popovich all the time in my examples.
100%. And Pop's the guy. Like who's the guy that's been there from the beginning? It's been Pop, right? And then the glory days of the Lakers, it's like, you know, Phil Jackson. Like there's a reason why like these historic franchises, even in other sports, it's all relative, you know?
Right. All right. Let's transition a little bit to how. So obviously we like this is a great discussion on culture, and there was a lot of takeaways on culture.
Bro. I know. I ramble a bit.
This is great. No. This is great stuff. Like this is amazing. I know. I appreciate that. So how did you grow from a club with one team to the biggest club in Canada? How did you grow your club to be the biggest club in Canada, in the country? That's insane. How'd you guys do that?
Yeah. So again, you know, Kelly Smith, our executive director, who the founder of the club, obviously it started with him. Like he had a grade eight team kind of the year before me. They were just really eager kids. You know, he entered them into an OVA tournament, decided to build a club. My team, the second team, came in, you know, slowly started adding teams kind of every year, very slow process. You know, at the end of the day, he's a full-time teacher. He was mainly coaching our team. Like you could only handle so much, you know, and you're a teacher, right, Brian? Like, you know, there's only so much you can do, you know, slowly got bigger when he started seeing the need for like, you know, running clinics and camps, obviously to help out some of the guys, you know, started opening up some programming, you know, summer camps. You know, I remember back in the day, we used to run camps at Beach Blast. We used to have a school bus at David Leader, pick up kids, drive them to Beach Blast. You know, we'd run a camp. Those are like those are some of the best days of my life, man, because I got to coach kids when I was like 16, 17. And then I got to train for 2 hours, like in between, you know, because myself and my beach partner at the time, Kadeem Clark, we were like, you know, we were serious in the OVA beach tour. Like we were big into beach. So he started opening up those camps and I got a little bigger. Obviously after 18U, you know, when our team started getting a lot of notoriety, it started, you know, getting a lot of other coaches interested. So then more teams started joining. You know, I'd say by the time we finished 18U, there might have been like 8 teams in the club, 7 teams, you know. Obviously, then we all kind of went off to university and college. Like we did our own thing. You know, Kelly was still running the club, but again, full-time teacher. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And it helped that guys like us would come back in the summers and run camps, you know, because, you know, we're broke college students, you know, we needed some money now, you know, and we didn't have to pay fees anymore. So it was kind of nice that we could run some camps and generate a bit of money. And he started running these weekend programs. So, you know, any weekend I didn't have a game with York, or I didn't have a game with Sheridan, you know, I'd run house league. So he just was really ambitious in terms of running house leagues and, you know, giving back to kids in the community. And then I'd say I did that for years. And then I started coaching beach, you know. And then it got to a point, I want to say 2014, 2015, I was in school and I was kind of like, I just wasn't enjoying it, man. I just wasn't, you know, I was never a guy, like I always got pretty good marks. I just hated being in a classroom. You know, I just hated being in that environment. I would do anything to like skip a class. I would do anything to like, you know, oh, I have a game tonight. You know, I'm gonna take the day off and rest, like stupid things, things I would never recommend a kid to do now. You know, I was just not motivated. So I remember the club was maybe at about like 800 kids a year at this point, 1,000 kids a year. And I just remember like, and you always get nervous because, you know, you talk to someone that you really trust or like a mentor of yours. And it's like, you say something like, hey, you know, I'm thinking about dropping out of school. And Brian, like we have brown parents. Like we already know how that conversation is going to go. Like, so for me, I was thinking he'd give me the same answer that like my parents are going to give me, like, are you stupid? Like, so sure enough, I guess because he knew me, you know, he was my teacher once upon a time. He coached me for years. He's like, I totally get it. It's not for you, you know? And I'm like, hey, like if there's a situation where like you're a full-time teacher, you know, the club can only get so big. Like, you know, I'm like, if there's a way that I can help jump on and, you know, and we can grow this thing a bit more. And he's like, yeah, for sure. Let's do it. Cause obviously it's his thing. It's like, he wants it to grow bigger, but he, you know, when you teach full time, you can only, you know, do so much. So yeah, I kind of just moved from there, man. So I jumped on like full time from years of just, you know, assistant coaching and, you know, running some camps here and there. And then, yeah, just now just continue to grow. And then, you know, shortly after, a couple other guys started jumping on full time and dedicating their time. And then, yeah, it just became a big thing. And yeah, we're almost at 5,000, you know, members a year now. And that was just maybe like 5 years ago, you know, and for us, that's a big thing, because all we care about right now is how do we grow even more? You know, like the beauty is we have this mindset of like 5,000 is not enough. Because there's freaking million kids out there, you know, like we have to get as many kids playing our sport as possible. So people wonder like, oh my God, like 5,000, like people don't get it. Like everyone puts so much emphasis on rep teams. Cause again, those are like the high profile, you know, we have 280 rep players. Players that play for teams, wear a Pac-Man jersey, go to provincials, go to nationals. 280 of them. The other, you know, 4,400, you know, 4,800. That's like from our camps, our weekend programs, six-year-olds, you know. And we have programming of all variety, you know. If you're in high school and you're a beginner, if you're in high school and you're a school team player, you know, if you're in grade 5 and you've played on your school team, if you're in grade 6 and you've never touched a ball before, like all this variety. And I think because of the variety that we offer, and we literally, if you're between 6 and 18, there is a program out there for you, whether you've touched a ball before or you've never touched a ball, or you're on the, you know, or you're on the provincial team, we have something for you. So I think because of the options that we've offered, and I think we're the, obviously a lot of clubs do it now, but I think because we were the first ones, we really became a household name. You know, we don't just get people from Mississauga anymore. We get people from all over. And I think, you know, just by doing it first and putting energy and effort into it first, you know, I think that's why, you know, it kind of became, you know, what it is today with all these players.
You know, it's funny. I think you hit it on the money when you said, you know, when you talked about earlier, when if you're coaching for the right reason, great things are going to happen regardless. And it's true, because when I think of club volleyball, and I think of a lot of coaches out there, the number one thing they focus on is creating the best rep teams. Like, I want to get the best rep teams. That's what I want to do. I want to win provincial and national championships. And that's a little selfish, because that's not for the kids. That's for your own ego, your own merit, like you said. But when you switch gears and say, you know what, I want as many kids as possible playing this game. Yeah. And that's a great, great stat. 280 rep players versus, you know, 4,800 potential other kids who were involved in, because you're providing a service. You just want more kids playing. That's how you grow. And it's cool, because you get to, you're affecting positive change. You're changing the game. You're changing lives. And you're winning by default.
Yeah. And I think the crazy thing is with the amount of youth we get playing, we actually don't even have enough rep teams to accommodate that youth. So the crazy thing is that we have kids in our program from like 6 years old to 12 years old. And obviously everyone progresses at their own rate. You know, everyone takes their own time as well. Like, let's be honest, volleyball is it's a hard sport to learn in terms of how, because again, there's so many little technical things, right? If your platform's off by a centimeter, you know, you're shanking the ball to the left or whatever, you know, so that we don't even have enough teams, so that a lot of our kids go off and go to other clubs, and we're okay with that. Cause like, this is volleyball. This is that volleyball for life type, you know, it's not like a kid plays for us and we get mad at them for going to another club. It's like, oh, this is great. Like, you found your rightful position in the sport. And a lot of kids are in it to play rep volleyball, like when they're starting. And a lot of kids are in it because their dream is to just play on their school teams, you know, or a lot of multi-sport athletes is like, hey, listen, I'm a full-time gymnast or I'm a full-time basketball player, but damn, like, volleyball is a sick sport. You know, we can offer them once a week of good volleyball for their age. You know, we can get we have so many ballers that like just love playing volleyball. And the thing is, if you're a baller high level, you're playing 6 days a week, 5 days a week minimum, you know, every Saturday you've got games and tournaments. We have a Sunday program for them, you know, especially if they're like high school level. Yeah, come man, like come with us. We'll teach you some stuff. Our coaches are all great. You know, we're all, you know, and I think the best thing about it and what parents really like is our coaches are all high level rep coaches. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a high level rep coach. Like, you know, my team, like, you know, the last two national championships, you know, my team won. I coach 7 year olds, man. I coach 9 year olds. Like, I love it. Like, it's, you know, and I think parents appreciate that too. Do we have a lot of younger coaches that we're mentoring? Of course we do. You know, so, and oftentimes we have these younger coaches working, but there's always a mentor coach. There's always a lead coach, you know? So there's no bounds to, you know, it's not like, you know, oh, I only, no, man, like I'll happily coach a group of like, you know, 7-year-olds. We run camps, you know, we run camps all summer. Those are the best, you know, and we're also high level rep coaches. So I think parents like that too, because not only are the kids getting knowledge, but like we understand the process of, you know, starting from nothing and then to being, you know, a great, great player and potentially, you know, and again, we've had teams that players that have gone to the national team program that play pro. So because we understand that process, we know that, man, we got to get these kids to just love the sport first, you know, and then how they develop is, you know, how they develop.
Right. Yo, this is great information. In this, like our listeners, they're going to have to go back and listen to this because I'm processing it in my head. And there's everything we're talking about is a formula for not only a championship team, but a championship club. And a club that will provide an amazing experience for their athletes. Cause that's what it's all about. And that's how you grow. As everything you're describing, it's funny. It sounds like, well, obviously, yeah, of course you want to do that. But I'm thinking all the clubs that I work with or I've worked with or I know for that matter, and 80% of them don't do this. They have a different mindset, a different way of thinking. Like, you know, I'm not to name names, but I know clubs that focus on their high performance. Like, I want to be a high performance club and I'm going to put all my resources in there. And if you don't make this, then you can go to another club. And that is not the way to do it. You know, like you're the Pac-Man model, your philosophy is every kid plays. There's something for every kid. Every kid plays. Well, more kids playing. And if you don't know how to play, great. We're going to teach you how to play.
Yeah.
Like that's amazing. Yeah. 100%.
There has to be, right. And it has to be like affordable for them. You know, we have to put them in a situation where like we can't scare them away, you know, because at the end of the day, like we are a premier high performance volleyball club. We really are, you know.
You are. But
people get scared because that term generally comes with a hefty price tag, you know, not because it actually costs that much, but it's because you can, you know, oh, well, we're high performance. So we really should be, you know, 60% more than, you know, the people where we don't really believe in that. Like we don't like. Our executive director said this years ago, and it always resonated. He says, high performance doesn't have to come with a high price tag. It just doesn't, you know? And I'm not bashing any programs, but, you know, you look at a lot of like provincial team things that they're just really expensive, man. They're just a lot of money. And it's always been tough for players in our club to commit to that. Like I've had so many guys on my team saying like, Jesse, what do I do? Like, I want to be a part of this program, man. But it's like 4 G's. It's like 3 G's for like 3 weeks, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro, I don't know what to tell you, man. Cause at the end of the day, like, is it a good experience? I think it is, man. Like, I think it's a cool experience to be a part of. I think you're going to be around different players, which is good. But I'm like, I also can't knock your mindset because that's how you, like, you're being mindful of your family. Like, you're being mindful of your mom and your dad who maybe work in a factory or work night shifts, you know? Where it's like, you feel like these kids feel guilty, man. They feel guilty asking their families for that type of money, you know? So we always made sure, man, everything we offer, you keep it as affordable as possible. And we'll even give you the best coaches on top of that, you know? And that's right. How you're going to build this thing. You know, you don't have to, just because we live in a certain city doesn't have to mean that we should charge, you know, this much, you know?
I support that. When I was coaching club, it actually cost me money to coach because like I coached in Scarborough. Half our kids, great kids, they just couldn't afford it. Like, it is what it is. It just, yeah. And we were like $2,000 at that time. And that included like nationals and provincial,
yeah, yeah.
Even included like a States tournament or something. That was crazy. And they just like, they couldn't afford it, but they were still playing. I was like, okay.
You can't turn a kid away. You can't turn a kid away from that. And again, if we were turned away when we were younger, then this wouldn't even be happening. You know, the reason why it is the way it is because we weren't turned down. We were given opportunity. You know, we were put in a position where we didn't even have to think about it. Cause even now, like as an adult, like thinking about money stresses you out. Man, my mortgage is coming up. Oh man, these bills, you know, you have a bunch of kids now, man. You're stressing out, you know, what when you can put a kid in a position where they don't even have to worry about it, man, then the sky's the limit, man. Cause you don't want a kid coming to your practice and stressing, like you're not going to get the best out of them. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I'm happy that we've been able to do that. And I'm happy that, you know, we put kids in a position where it's like, hey, volleyball is a pretty cheap sport. It can be a cheap sport, you know, just to get your foot in the door. I'm like, hey, come on, like come to one of our camps. It's 10 weeks. It's $150, you know, come try it out with us for a season. If you like it, hey, we'll share some other options and some other avenues with you, you know? So that's been, that's why we've got a lot of kids just testing it out. It's a simple sport to just, you know, give it a shot.
Well, man, we've talked about, you know, championship. I love talking about championship culture. It's one of my favorite topics to talk about because it's super important. We talked about how you guys are capable of having championship teams. We talked about how to grow a club, and your club is the biggest club in Canada, which is amazing. So our listeners, there's a lot of things to take away from here. I mean, there's a lot of discussion and stuff like that, but there were so many great points. I tried to elaborate on some of them that Jesse talked about. So I would re-listen to some of them. And my hope is that, you know, coaches listening to this, you could take some stuff away and apply it to your gym and your club and your teams right away. Because honestly, this is like, I mean, I've been doing this for 15 years. You've been doing this since he was born, probably, like, I don't know, whenever, or grade eight or whatever, whenever you started, like it's true. And it's we're saying the same things. And if you're a regular listener for me, I've been talking about this stuff for a long time, and it wholeheartedly is. I mean, it's no secret. It's the truth. It is what it is. Jesse, man, I appreciate your time. You have any final thoughts you want to leave our listeners with?
Honestly, I just want to thank you, Brian. Like, I appreciate you. You know, you've always been supportive of the club. You know, you've always been a fan of me. Like, you know, I've seen you over the years at tournaments, you know, like, and it, you always make it a point to come up to me and you know, tell me my team's doing good. Like, at the end of the day, like, I do it because I love to do it. I do it for the kids. But, like, I'll be honest, it's nice when you have a peer or a guy in your lane, in your avenue, who comes up to you and says, "Hey, bro, like, I really like what you're doing with your team." You've always been a super supportive guy. So I appreciate you having me on. I'd love to come on again another time. Obviously, we could have talked for 6 hours today. So maybe we'll chop it up again some other time.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Yeah, 100% support what you're doing. I support the vision, and it's great. And it's great to see our sport grow, man. You know, that's what we got to do. We keep growing the sport. So, listeners, thank you for tuning in. And like I mentioned right before the show, if you are a coach out there, and you want some mentorship, you want some guidance, you know, one of the greatest things I learned as a young coach, actually, the biggest growth that happened in my coaching career was when I found a mentor. When I found a mentor, I learned more in 3 weeks than I did in the previous 3 years, because I could lean on their experience. I could get, you need that mentorship. You ask anyone in any skill, doesn't matter what it is. You need a coach. Your team, you think your team would be that good without you? Of course not. They need a coach, and coaches need coaches too. So if you don't have one, I really recommend you getting one. And if you don't have a way to get a coach or get a mentor, I'm here for you guys through my membership called Digital Volleyball Academy, and it's open until Thursday, July 1st. We're closing doors at 10 p.m. Eastern time. All right. And then we'll probably open them up sometime again throughout the year, but they will be closed as of Thursday. So I hope to see you inside Digital Volleyball Academy, coaches. Thanks again, Jesse. I really appreciate you being here. And if you want to register, digitalvolleyballacademy.com, and I hope to see you inside. Take care.
All right. Cue the music. Look, are you at the stage you want to be in your volleyball journey? How would it feel to get clarity on your training, and instead of taking months to get better, you could improve in weeks, if not days? When I was a young coach and player, I felt this way all the time. The truth is, after I got some great advice on how to be efficient, my learning curve grew exponentially. Let me show you how to be more efficient and effective in this game. I invite you to check out CoachBTraining.com for more resources that you can use to take your game to the next level. I look forward to helping you reach your volleyball goals.